welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz. I'm your co-host, Alan Jedi Zog, alongside John English, the Germs guy. John, how are you this week?
I'm doing good.
Awesome.
How's life treating you?
Life is good. I'm not too bad. Life has been good, especially jazz life, but life overall. A lot of Star Wars stuff going on with me right now, but I'm good. So, we got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we last spoke right after the trade, and now we've been able to play a few games and see what the result is. And I think the result's pretty good.
Yeah.
I felt the loss of Cantor's talent not being on the team anymore, but in a lot of ways, there's been addition by subtraction in that it just means more minutes for Rudy, and it means that the benefit of Cantor not being in the lineup opens things up for Favors, for Gobert, for Hayward in a way. It's been pretty cool to see.
Okay, John. So take a moment and break it down for everybody listening. I know where you're going with this, but I want you to kind of break it down a little bit. Where exactly do you feel or see the Jazz are missing Cantor right now?
They're missing him when other people are not scoring and they need someone to score. Like in that Laker game, they could have used Cantor going in there and just getting some stuff going down low. But, you know, his outside shooting wasn't great, so they don't miss those missed attempts. His defense was suspect, and the guys that are getting those minutes are doing a better job. I know he's going to be a great player in Oklahoma. It's just a better situation for him, and he's going to thrive, and we may even, you know, come to rue the fact that we had to let him go for not much. But he wasn't going to work here, so it's okay that they moved on from him. They still got a future first-round pick that they can use in some kind of trade down the road. But, you know, the benefit of not having him at all outweighs having him and having his minutes being taken from other people.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, Rudy's, he's got one of their highest PERs. He's at 21.8. He's an outstanding defensive player. He's a pretty good offensive player. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about how the offense slows down when Rudy's in there. And overall, yes, the Jazz are scoring less overall when Rudy's in there, but that's because the other team is scoring that much less. The game is slower, and the Jazz are just outscoring them. I mean, I look at the Portland San Antonio games as more indicative of what the future is going to be than the Lakers game. I'm taking the Lakers game as an exception.
Right?
Did you watch the Lakers game?
I did. The first quarter was excellent. That's where I was going to go for a second. You were talking about scoring. Speaking of scoring, the Jazz put up 30 points in the first quarter last night. You know, they scored. Hayward was on fire. And it seemed like everything was clicking. And then slowly pieces here and there started falling apart. And I don't know if it was you or if someone pointed out, and I think it was you. We were talking about this during the Spurs game. I think you tweeted it out last night that the Jazz beat the Spurs minimizing their turnovers at, I think it was 13 for that game, and had and were making 76 to 80% of their free throws, if I remember correctly. But then last night, they were pitiful from the free throw line and had over 21 turnovers last night.
When the Spurs game was great, they had more free throws and they were making their free throws. Their turnovers were low. I think it was 21-9, something like that. I can't remember. But they forced the Spurs into a lot of turnovers. And we saw, like, the opposite happen with this game.
Yeah.
Hayward started out hot, but he missed his last five or six shots. Looks like he missed his last six shots. He had some free throws in there, but man, when they needed him to take over, he just couldn't quite do it.
And it to me, it didn't seem like the Jazz's defense was bad last night, unless you look at their transition defense, and that is a result of it. It's the they turned the ball over right after that quarter. Some of them were silly mistakes too. It's not like they were full takers. They were just like mental errors, and they ended up turning into transition baskets.
Well, even with all the mistakes they've been making, they started the fourth quarter up 11. Let's see. I think they're up 9, and then Rudy scored right away.
Right.
So in the middle of the fourth, where Hayward wasn't in the game, and he sat for longer than he usually does, which you think would be okay against the Lakers. But the Jazz had three turnovers in a row, and it looked like the Lakers were coming back. So they put Hayward back in. He makes a shot right away. Jazz are up 7. Everything seems like it's going to be okay. Favors gets fouled. He makes 1 or 2 free throws. That's a little nervous. But it's 88-80 at that point. And I'm on a 20-9 run. And there's just no reason for that.
No.
I mean, no. The Lakers, they didn't even have... They have a really thin roster anyway, and they were missing a lot of their players. You know, they didn't have Nick Young. They didn't have Kobe Bryant. They didn't have Ronnie Price. The Lakers are the Sixers West, really, at this point. And yet, Jazz let them hang around and made dumb mistakes. And, you know, it's the third game in the last month and a half where if they had just made 70% of their free throws, they would have won the game.
Yeah.
So...
Well, and when you go down to the difference between this game and San Antonio and back to the turnovers and the free throws, in my mind, that right there, this discrepancy in both games, is an indication that the team is just not quite there yet. They're playing defense at a high level, but even last night you heard during the contest, you heard Bowler and Matt Harpring talking about the Jazz losing focus, and you could see it. It's almost like their focus dismantled itself in the second quarter, and they really never could recover it. And I think that's an example of a young team still learning how to hang on to that focus and that energy and that direct, what putting yourself into the game for the full 48 minutes. And I think they wondered, I wonder if there's a thought process that, oh, we just beat the Spurs at home. A really good team, we should be able to just let off the gas a little bit against the Lakers, and they kind of did.
I think that's true, but I think Hayward and Favors are been in the league long enough that we really shouldn't be able to let them have that excuse anymore.
Right.
And it was their play that helped, sink them. They were tied for minus 11, the worst plus minus on the team. It's like they should be able to be the calming vets, even though they're not the oldest on the team. They might as well be, since Millsap and Ingles are the oldest, and they're both rookies.
Well,
but the youth of the team would be the guards. The guard play was just awful, except for Elijah Millsap.
Well, and that's
Dante, Joe, and Trey, it's not good.
Well, and that segues me to my next point. Talk about positives last night. You brought up Millsap, and I'll bring in Hood. Millsap and Hood were fantastic last night, especially that late run that got the Jazz back into the game after they had found themselves, I think it was behind. Am I getting the right area right? Where Millsap, I think, went on an 8-0 run by himself, and then Hood came in and hit a three-pointer, and suddenly it's an 11-0 run between your two young rookies.
Yeah, the Lakers never got ahead in that area, but they were really close. I think they might have even tied it up.
Yeah.
And then Elijah single-handedly goes on this 8-0 run, and Hood backs it up. And then it looked like at that point, as we're getting to the end of the third quarter, that everything was going to be okay again. Because it was tied at 67, and then we end the quarter at at 78-69. So
right, but it was,
and
it was
because of those two,
which was a nice positive to see the two of them play as well as they did. Where maybe we can't find positives everywhere else, the two of them looked really good last night.
Yeah, if we want to talk positives, all we got to do is look at the previous two games. You know, if you want to talk positives on the team,
yeah.
Like I'm looking at the Spurs box score right now, and you know, against the Lakers, Trey, it's not like Trey was shooting us out of the game like he had in other games, because he was only 2 of 8, so his shot wasn't there. But he wasn't. It wasn't. You know, it wasn't this 3 of 17 effort. It was just like nobody else was really helping him out either. Right. But with the Blazers and Spurs, where he embraced that sixth man scoring role, it was terrific for the Jazz. I mean, he had 23 against the Spurs, and you know, the bench was able to look to him for that leadership. And you know, the other guys didn't have that great a night. Millsap only had 4 that night, and Hood only had 2 that night. So they needed Trey to step up in that capacity, and he did.
All right, so let's look forward. The Jazz have a stretch of games coming up that, for the most part, are winnable. I'm looking at the next 7 or 8 games. You've got 2 playoff games. One of them against 2 playoff teams, 3 playoff teams, one of them being on the road against a very good Memphis team. Where do you see the Jazz over this next stretch?
They should beat the Nuggets because the Nuggets are a mess. They should beat the Bucks because it's at home. And the Bucks made a lot of personnel changes. And I know the Bucks are doing really well this year, but I expect the Jazz to learn the lesson from the Lakers and to try a lot harder. So I do think that they should be able to beat the Bucks. I don't think they'll beat the Grizzlies. The Celtics, I think they'll want some revenge. I think they should beat the Celtics. The Celtics are a little better now that they got Isaiah Thomas, but that's not enough to, you know, put them over the top or anything. I mean, the Celtics could still make the playoffs in the East, but that's just how bad the East is.
Right. That is a road game, mind you, so that's going to be a tough stretch for them anyway. They've got four games, I think, in 5 or 6 nights there on the road on the East Coast.
We'll see. If they're all on neutral court, then the Jazz should go 6-1.
Right.
But, you know, I think they will lose one of those games they shouldn't, whether it's Boston or whether it's Brooklyn. I mean, you know, they should beat Brooklyn because Brooklyn's a mess.
Right.
But, you know, who knows?
The other team I look at just past that is the Detroit game. And Detroit's been coming on of late. In fact, they're only a game out of the Eastern playoff, landscape right now. And they're giving Brooklyn a run for their money. I think it's in Brooklyn in that 8th seed, I think. So they're giving a run for their money. And Detroit's been playing well lately. That might be a game that the Jazz might have a tough go about as well.
Well, look at it this way. If the Jazz had won last night, they would be 22-34. And that would mean they're only a game and a half out of the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Yeah. Well,
that's how bad the East is.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, Detroit's 23-34. So they're right there. Any of those, I mean, okay, Miami, even with Bosch out, I think with Dragic, they're going to secure that 7th seed.
Right.
They'll probably finish the season with like a 39-43 record, something like that. That 8th seed is going to be awful. And whoever gets that 8th seed will probably be able to do it with 35 wins. So you have the Nets, the Hornets, the Pistons, the Pacers, and the Celtics, who all could, you know, realistically get to that point. It could be a real dogfight at the end for that 8th seed. Who wants it the most? Who would rather just go in the lottery and, you know, get their picks?
Well, and the one team in that mix that I'm kind of watching closely is the Pacers, because word was, I think, what, a week ago I heard that Paul George is eyeballing a comeback before the end of the season.
And see, that would change everything. That would be the Thunder of the East, because yep. if they get Paul George back and they make that eighth seed, suddenly Atlanta doesn't have a cakewalk to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I'd be nervous about, if I was in the East, I'd be nervous about Indiana getting up there.
And that depends on, and that all depends on Indiana's ability to keep afloat between now and then. And if he comes back, man, watch out. So.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Did they make any trades on draft day? I think they were one of the ones that didn't.
No, I don't think they did, that I can remember.
I'm going to jump to their page real quick. Let's see. Paul George is the only one out. It looks like... No, these all look like their guys. So it doesn't look like they made any moves. But if Paul George comes back...
That could be one of the most dangerous below 500 teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, their guys are right in the 10 to, it's really funny. Here are their averages. George Hill, 13.5 points a game. David West, 12.7. CJ Miles, 12.7. Rodney Stuckey, 12.2. Rory Hibbert, 10.9. AJ Price, he's only played 10 games. He has 10.5. But they got a bunch of guys who are all ready to be a terrific supporting cast for a star.
Yeah.
So they just need that star to come in, and then they'll just have this amazing starting five. But they don't have that star in right now.
What's their record right now?
23-34.
So really, if they can stay afloat, put themselves right in that, like you said, that 7th or 8th seed to get Paul George back, that whole landscape changes.
8, 9, 10, and 11 in the East all have 23 wins. And Boston has 22. So 8 through 12, they're all right there. So it's which one of those five wants it the most?
Okay, so back to the Jazz. You got all those guys in that same area with the Jazz. If you were to pick, the end of the season right now, and the Jazz, you know, win, say, and you and I talk about this. My pick at the beginning of the season was right around 37 wins. I think the Jazz could finish with that. If they finish with 37 wins, you've got all those other teams in that same batch. Could the Jazz perhaps surpass most of those guys in that lottery race as well, as far as moving up ahead of most of them?
Yes. If the Jazz finish with 37 wins, I can see them with the 12th pick. I would assume that the Pelicans and the Suns will stay better. Sacramento might catch the Jazz as far as that goes, since George Karl's there.
So we might see the end of Tank Watch by Germs Guy.
Sorry, I just did the last one.
We're just saying we're not ever seeing another Tank Watch.
I just put one out today, and I did it as this really should be the last one of the season.
Yeah, because I think the Jazz are, what, in eighth place?
They're eighth.
Eighth place.
So, you know, unless some injury happens and then they lose a bunch of games, they really shouldn't ever fall below eighth again. I do see them kind of staying even with Sacramento for a while.
Right.
But the Jazz overall have an easy schedule over the next couple weeks. They have some losses you can write in right now. But overall, they have a pretty decent schedule. And they could go on a good run here. If you look at it this way, that they're 4-2 of their last six, they could continue on that kind of pace for the next couple weeks through these games.
I'll be honest, and this is outside of realistic, I would like to see the Jazz starting to play over that 500 basketball. You look at the last 30 games, they're playing 500 ball right now. I would like to see them get over that and get into the situation where they're playing better than 500 ball. And I think they can. The end of the season, that last 2 week stretch of the last part of the season is brutal. I mean, they've got Portland, they've got a few games on that last 2 weeks, but between now and then, they could easily roll out a bunch of games, like you're saying, and be playing above 500 basketball for a good 3 or 4 weeks here.
Well, I look at it this way. Sacramento has to land in the top 10 to keep their first round pick.
Yeah.
And, you know, George Karl could get that team good enough that management just kind of steps in at the end of March and says, all right, we're sitting DeMarcus Cousins. We're sitting Rudy Gay. We're going to keep our first round pick this year. It's to try to keep them from getting too much so they can get that one pick, keep it for this year, and then, you know, try to make the playoffs next year, and then they're not worried about losing it.
Right.
I could see them doing that, and I actually think they'd be smart to do that. I think they ought to let Carl instill his winning mentality, and then, you know, based on how it goes, just kind of make sure they do enough to not slide out of the top 10. And the Jazz face Sacramento twice in April. So, the Jazz could be facing a skeleton crew. I mean, this is wild speculation. George Karl might try to win every game and Sacramento loses their first round pick this year.
Right.
But the last four games of the season are Memphis, Portland, Dallas, and Houston. So the Jazz, however they're doing, they could easily lose the last four games of the season. All four of those teams are going to be fighting for position.
Yeah. Lots of excitement going ahead for Jazz fans. Jazz fans should be excited. I know I am. I know you are. There is a lot to be excited about heading towards the end of the season here for the Jazz. And it gives promise to next year being even a better year with the return of Alec Burks, the return of what we're watching. I think next year's team could very well be hovering around the 7th or 8th seed in the West playoff run.
Yeah, this is going to be a big offseason. Because even if Jazz wind up with like the 11th or 12th pick, that means it's because they went on this good trajectory. And you know, there are a lot of winnable games in March.
Yeah.
They still got a Knicks home game, Washington home game. Washington's been falling apart. A lot of good stuff in there. But you know, this summer, when I look at this summer, I really think they're going to do something on draft night, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if their own first-round pick, as well as the Oklahoma pick, and a player to find themselves moved for a talent upgrade on the roster so that the Jazz can focus on making the playoffs next year.
Agreed. I would agree. And that will be I'll be interested. I mean, as we get closer, that's going to have to be something we visit, because I wonder who that player might be. If the Jazz were to package it, who would that player be?
Yeah, that's the question, is how much can they get? Which stars are going to be disgruntled? Which teams left the playoffs too early? You know, who wants to come close to blowing it up?
And a lot of people, I've seen it whispered and mentioned, maybe ship off Alec Burks. You know me, I'm a big Burks fan, so I'd rather not. And in the case of Burks, I think he'd be a hard sell in a trade, because he's due a raise next year. He's coming off of an injury. I'm not sure a lot of teams are keen on making a trade to bring him over it with all of those variables in place. So he might not be that guy. But there's a couple other guys on the team that Jazz could look to ship off in some sort of a trade.
Well, if they wanted to trade Alec Burks, and I don't think they do.
Neither do I.
It wouldn't be this summer, because they haven't. He hasn't been able to show off how much improvement he has.
Yep.
He got his money, so the money's there, but now he needs to show that he's earned it. And he was doing okay. He wasn't, like, worse or anything, but he wasn't quite showing his improvement. I figured as the season progressed, we would see that improvement, but then you know, I'll hear Bill Simmons about how overpaid Burks is. That's like his go-to rest. So I don't think Alex overpaid. He's not underpaid. I thought it was about right.
What
they did. But, you know, that's coming with the assumption that he's going to keep improving. And I think he will. But
well, and we'll let Bill Simmons talk all he wants, because right now he's a fan of a team that has no identity. And I'm not sure that Danny Ainge even knows where that team's going at this point in time.
Yeah, that Isaiah Thomas trade was weird.
Every trade they've done in the last 6 months to a year is weird, John. Really. They've made a lot of moves that just have not made sense.
Well, I understood the Jeff Green trade. but I don't understand the Isaiah Thomas trade. I don't understand why you're bringing Isaiah Thomas in when it sounds like he was not good for the Suns locker room, and you just drafted Marcus Smart, and you already have Avery Bradley.
And you traded away another player who is turning out to be as much of a problem in another location that he was for you as well.
Oh, Rondo?
Yeah.
That trade was great for Boston.
Right?
It sucks for Dallas.
Right. You did see the news yesterday, right?
He ended.
Yeah, because he had it out with Carlisle on the bench. Really nice call there, Rondo. Really nice.
Yeah, what is his situation? He might be a free agent this summer.
I believe he is. I'm not sure Dallas signs him back.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I'm not sure how many teams want to go after that guy. That's a tough guy right there because he's turning out to be one of those guys that could be bad for locker rooms.
Well, Dallas is in a good position. Dang.
Yeah. They're in a very good position.
They could re-sign Tyson Chandler for less money. They could just let Rondo walk if it doesn't work out with him. You know, Brendan Hayward's amnesty comes off their books. So they'll have a lot of flexibility.
Oh, yeah.
They have an enviable amount of flexibility. Dallas could really do some re-upping
on
their talent.
Yeah, and I think aside from Dirk, I think Varea might be their next highest paid player. I don't know how much Montez is being played right now.
No. They got Chandler Parsons.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They're paying Chandler Parsons.
They got Chandler Parsons. Monta Ellis will probably exercise his player option. Or maybe he won't, and he'll just let renegotiate a long deal for him.
Yeah.
That's probably what he'll do.
Yeah, intriguing.
Raymond Felton, I'm sure he'll exercise his player option.
They're heavy on the guard.
Yeah, they got JJ for a deal.
Yeah, and they're heavy on the guard.
Well, all of them are expiring.
Right, well, Devin Harris, is he expiring this year as well?
No. They got Devin long-term.
Okay. So.
So they were hoping Rondo would be an upgrade over Devin, and he just isn't. I mean, he is when he wants to, but all the other stuff going on with him, he's not worth it.
Well, and they benched him the night before they suspended him. They benched him. They bring in Devin Harris. Devin Harris gives you the same production you got from Rondo in that short 20-minute stint. He played up winning the ballgame. That's not a sign for Rondo, if I'm reading that right. Rondo, that situation does not look favorable for Rondo right now. So. All right. Anything else we want to cover tonight we haven't talked about?
Well, let's see. You got the Star Wars Rebels finale.
Yes.
I haven't been watching the show, but I know it has a very exciting development for the finale.
Yes. Have you
seen the hype for that?
Do you have Disney XD?
Yeah.
Okay. You need to go back and watch the season, John. It's worth it. Go, just take your kids by your side this weekend and have a big fun little day of watching Rebels. I recommend it. The finale looks incredible. They're bringing Darth Vader in. There's question marks. You know, it's already been speculated today that the Inquisitor, the new bad guy that's here, might be saying his last goodbye because Vader might have had enough with him. So, which I'm kind of excited about. If ruthless Vader comes in and says, "You have failed me," and kills the first villain of Star Wars Rebels, this would be fun. You know, return to Vader from Empire. So.
Yeah. Well, I watched like the first three episodes, and then the rest of them are just kind of sitting on my DVR.
Well, catch up. They get better as the season goes on. In fact, their best episodes are since January, so well worth watching. Movies? Seen any movies? Going out to see a movie?
I'm going to go see Focus Saturday. The last one I saw in theaters was Kingsman, The Secret Service. That was really good.
Yeah, I don't think I read your...
It's from director Matthew Vaughn, who did... No, I haven't put up my review yet. I'll probably get that up tonight.
Okay.
But it was really good. Matthew Vaughn directed it, and he's the guy that directed X-Men First Class. And you remember how X-Men First Class kind of had this James Bond vibe to it, because it was in...
Yep. It looks like Kingsman should fit that same mold.
And to tie into Star Wars, Kingsman has Mark Hamill in it.
Yes. Yes, I guess it does. So, and Focus...
He plays a British guy, so...
And you're planning on Focus next week, right?
Right.
Sweet.
Right.
It's Will Smith. But
Will Smith's finally just kind of relaxing into his next phase of his career, where he doesn't have to be in the middle of these sci-fi blockbusters. He can just kind of be a little more... in more normal movie star roles. I actually read an interview with him where he felt like After Earth, the failure of After Earth, really just kind of changed the way he was going to approach his career, that he wasn't going to be that concerned about always having to have the big blockbusters out, and just kind of watching that failure kind of made him decide to change gears in his career, which I think is great.
Well, and the one gear I've seen him change is he and Jada have been writing more now, because they did that adaptation of Annie. Did he write Focus as well?
No, he didn't write it. I'm trying to remember who wrote it. Now I'm just going to look it up.
I can't remember, because I know...
I think it looks like the guy who directed it also wrote it.
Okay.
A guy
okay.
named Glenn Ficarra and John Rica. They're the team that wrote and directed it.
Okay.
And it looks like he's just kind of taking these younger talents and giving him their first real big movie.
That's
pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a good fit for him. Like I said, he's been trying his hand at writing and directing the last few years. After Earth was one, Annie was another. And I know you and I talked about Annie. You weren't a huge fan of Annie, if I remember correctly. Right?
No.
Okay.
Right.
So, and I know he and Jada have been trying their hand at that. I'm wondering if he needs to put that aside and get back to just acting and having a good time, because when he does that, he's so much better.
Okay. It looks like Ficarra and Rica are the guys who did Crazy Stupid Love. That's pretty good.
They're doing Focus?
Yeah, they're doing Focus. So it's a little bit different, but...
Yeah?
Yeah, that was okay. I'm gonna look at Will Smith's writing. No, he wrote After Earth, and that is the last thing he wrote.
I thought he and Jada had something to do with the Annie adaptation. Did they not?
They probably executive produced it.
Maybe that's what it was.
That just means you can put my name on it if it'll help sell it.
Ah.
Jada wrote some video game stuff for I Am Legend, the video game, I guess.
Right.
Video shorts. Huh. I don't know what those were. Maybe those were some viral things they were trying to do. But yeah, if I click on producer, they helped produce Annie, but they didn't write it.
Okay. That was my mistake. Well, all right, John. Why don't we call this a wrap? Because we're starting to get to the spotty phase of this broadcast for some reason. So, and
okay,
you need to get home to stick some sicko kids, huh? So.
Yep.
All right, everybody. That wraps it up for another edition of Jedi and Germs and Jazz. It's been a pleasure talking to y'all. We hope you enjoy yet another episode. We look forward to the upcoming Jazz games. Hit us up on Twitter at GermsGuy, GermsGuy, or at JediZog, JediZaugg, or at Jedi and Germs. We would love to hear from you. We do interact. We have lots of fun on Twitter. So hit us up. Movies, jazz, it doesn't matter. We're all excited. Thanks for joining us.